Welcome, friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today. And as some of you know, I was raised as a homeschooled kid back in the 1960s and 70s. I'm raising five of my children out here in the Eastern Plains of Colorado, homeschooling them as well in the second generation. And, friends, today we're going to talk a little bit about entrepreneurism. I have been somewhat of an entrepreneur from the beginning myself, and generally homeschoolers are likely to be drawn towards home-based economies. Not always, but I see a rising group of young entrepreneurs that cherish their freedom from large bureaucratic structures and also consider the idea of home-based economies as attractive. And, of course, we talk about home-based economies a lot on this program because we want to see our children, our families, incorporated into the wider economic vision. It's not just about home education. It's about the wider vision of home economics that, of course, includes education because education is important to raise up kids who are able to function in economies in the years to come. But a family-based economy is really where we're headed here. Well, young entrepreneurs is what we're going to talk about today. As far as my life is concerned, I found the corporate life rather boring. It was restrictive. It was short on opportunity as far as I was concerned. And I managed to get out of the corporate world at 35 years of age. It was my goal from the beginning, from the first day I was in the corporate world, working that engineering job in Santa Barbara, California, my goal was to get myself out of that thing so that I could hopefully have my own venture, my own entrepreneurial endeavors going as well as ministry work. So that was my intention from the beginning. It took me 10 years to get out of it because I had to get out of debt. I had to raise up a little bit of capital. But what we're finding among homeschoolers, there are more and more young entrepreneurs. And by the way, it's not just homeschoolers. A Time Magazine Person of the Year was Mark Zuckerberg, the initiator of Facebook. And the guy looks like he's like 17 or 18 years old. He might be 23, 24, whatever. He's a really young kid, and the guy is worth billions upon billions of dollars. Well, with me right now to talk about young entrepreneurism is Chad Roach, who I mentored for some 4 or 5 years. He's virtually on his own now, and he's got his own endeavors. Chad, welcome back to the program.
Thanks much.
And by the way, we're going with Nathan Sled as well, another great entrepreneur out in Grants Pass, Oregon, who's done something incredible with zip lines. But we'll get back to that in just a moment. I want to talk with Chad a little bit on young entrepreneurism and what's happening with him. Chad, here on businesstown.org or businesstown.com, I've got some characteristics for entrepreneurs. I want to run these things by you and see if you can check some of these off. Entrepreneurs are self-controlled. They do not function well in structured organizations, do not like someone having authority over them. That sound like you? It sounds a little bit like you.
There's some striking similarities there.
Mm-hmm. You may not be able to afford a support staff to cover all business functions, and therefore you need to work long hours.
14 a day. 16
a day, but you're good at taking the Sabbath. I know you take that Sunday off, and you come out to worship, and then you snooze in the afternoon.
You can do anything in six as long as you've got one.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Six times 24 hours is
roughly
136.
That's right.
So check there, too. Entrepreneurs are self-confident when they are in control of what they're doing and working alone. They tackle problems immediately with confidence and are persistent in their pursuit of their objectives. Does that sound like you?
There's got to be some level of tenacity in it, otherwise it's no fun.
Tension there between self-confidence and God-confidence.
That's right.
I mean, you are confident, but as a Christian, I mean, it's a matter of you got to be confident in God, but you cannot survive with no confidence. You can't go into that market without any confidence whatsoever.
It's the business application of Martin Luther's quote, to sin boldly.
Yeah.
Whatever you do in business and entrepreneurism, you have to do it. You have to do it with all your might, and it may fail, and you may end up flat on your face with mud all over you, but at least you tried and you gave it everything.
Yeah.
And then every once in a while, it works.
And you've been at this for a while. Now, talk to the folks a little bit about what you're doing. Credit card processing, that's where you started. And then you moved on to some other things.
Sure. I started with credit card processing at 17. My dad had trained me in sales in his office during the years of 15, 16, 17 years old. So by the time I was 17, I started my own sales business doing credit card processing. I've done that for the last 6 years and continued that. And just about 3 years ago, started a business in the investment arena doing gold and silver bullion investments. And that business has grown rapidly over the last 3 years.
The market there is just raging right now.
It
turns out most other investments a little squishy.
That's right.
But people can still own gold and silver.
It's the one investment that's up 10% in the last 3 days.
Yeah.
But,
the last 3 days.
The last three
exactly.
days. But, and that's worked its way out now to be a full-blown family adventure. I couldn't do it without my sisters, my dad. The whole family is involved. And, we are growing now to the point where it hopefully will be full-time for pretty much the entire
family. And at the beginning, when you first started, I think silver was $4, $6, $8 an ounce or something. Now, what's it pushing?
33 an ounce.
Yeah. So. 30, I mean, that's 800% increase in, what, 5, 6 years. Meanwhile, everything else is going down, with the exception of maybe Mid-Eastern oil.
That's right, right. Yeah. Right. If you're in the crude oil business.
All right, a few other things about entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs have a never-ending sense of urgency to develop their ideas. Inactivity makes them impatient, tense, and uneasy. I noticed you're starting to get a little tense and uneasy right now. So we got to get off the microphone. You got to get back to your sales calls in just a moment. But you don't like to be inactive. I mean, inactivity is just no way.
I have 13 seconds of patience.
Right.
Don't use it
at
all.
You're not sitting around waiting for the phone to ring.
That's right.
Right. You're on to the next thing. And you have irons in the fire all the time. I mean, is that what you do?
I enjoy being too busy. If I don't have a lot to do on my plate in a given day, I feel like I can't get anything done. It's the pressure of everything going on and all the responsibilities that I've delegated to myself that keeps me operating at a good sense of efficiency.
Yeah. So entrepreneurs thrive on activity and are not likely to be found sitting on a bank fishing unless the fish are biting. I don't know if you fish at all. I mean,
pretty much not.
Yeah,
not
a lot of sitting around. Comprehensive awareness. Successful entrepreneurs can comprehend complex situations that may involve planning, making strategic decisions, and working on multiple business ideas simultaneously. They are farsighted and aware of important details, and they will continuously review all possibilities to achieve their business objectives. Now, Chad, you are a visionary, but you're also a detail-oriented person. I mean, you are on top of the details. You're still involved in our ministry, and I know you're organizing this conference, the Family Economics Conference, coming up in just 2 weeks. So it's important that you address the details. You
That's
are
right.
probably the most detailed guy I know, but how does that interact with your vision? I mean, you got to bring vision in as well.
That's right. I would say overall it's the big picture which drives the day-to-day, and it's the day-to-day accomplishment and gaining what you're after that keeps you motivated after the big picture too. So they kind of play off of each other. The harder you work, the more success that you get in terms of accomplishing some of your goals, the more excited you are to take on the next round of projects, and you're coming up with new ideas all the time, and you hit them as hard as you can.
Yeah. Entrepreneurs also accept things as they are and deal with them accordingly. They may or may not be idealistic, but they are seldom unrealistic. They will change their direction when they see that change will improve their prospects for achieving their goals. And you are open to that. I mean, you are willing to make shifts and changes all the time. I mean, you're going to shift a lane here. You're going to take an exit over here, depending on what happens. You're not going to be a pie in the sky kind of a guy.
There's no room to be static in the world of entrepreneurism. You constantly have to recalibrate and readjust, sometimes within a minute a day, an hour, certainly month to month. You're constantly looking for ways to improvise, to realign the way that you do things, your processes, even your end goals as the market changes around you and as opportunities come up all the time.
Now, Chad, I'm not going to tell everybody how successful you've been, but God has blessed your business in an unbelievable way over the years. I've seen you grow in many, many ways. But looking back over the last 4 to 5 years, how have you grown in your entrepreneurial endeavors? I mean, how has God shaped you and your character along the way?
Entrepreneurism is humbling. Because it doesn't matter what you do, to some extent or another, you'll experience challenge and difficulty and at one level or another, unmet goals. And so even while God has blessed me immensely, I've also learned many of my limits. I've learned what I can't do, and I've learned how much I need the rest of my family and other people, how much I need wise counsel and good advice. Mistakes that I made 3 or 4 years ago, I look back on and I just can't believe that I did that. But I'm also very thankful to have gotten the chance to grow through those opportunities over the years.
I think we're going to see some common threads as we continue through this series on young entrepreneurs. But you're going to hear these things, folks, on the program. Mentorship, absolutely important. Debt-free approach to raising capital and growing the business. That's going to be a principle as well. And Chad didn't get a chance to mention that, but he has grown debt-free over the years. And, of course, you've got to apply yourself with a lot of diligence, a willingness to change, willingness to learn, willingness to continue to adapt to the changing circumstances around you. These are the sorts of things I'm hearing from these young entrepreneurs, some of which have been amazingly successful, friends. We're going to talk with Nathan Sled in just a moment from Sled Ventures. Be back in just a moment. This is Kevin Swanson. Maybe you've heard of home education. For the last 25 years, families have been bringing education home as they integrated education back into the family. Now this is spawning a new movement, and it's called family-based economics. Could this movement salvage the family? Could it save an economy or produce a sustainable agriculture? You know, when the debt-based economic systems fail, when the family fails, when the non-sustainable agricultural systems fail, what are you going to do? It's time to get a vision for biblical family-based economics now. The wise man builds his systems on the rock. Now the foolish men didn't, and now look at what's happening. We're taking the 2011 Family Economics Conference to North Carolina on March 11th and 12th, 2011. Invited speakers include Doug Phillips from Vision Forum, Eric Weir from Weir Capital Investments, Scott Brown, and yours truly, Kevin Swanson. We're talking about how you will prepare your children for the future without brick-and-mortar colleges. We're talking about mentorships, contractualization, networking into the changing economies, family dynamics to the integrated economy, family inheritance, bootstrapping entrepreneurism, sustainable family economic systems, and family health care options that avoid socialist medical systems. Folks, almost every developed nation today reports social and economic decline on the macro scale. But we believe that our families can thrive in the midst of it all. We can build gardens in the ashes. For more information, you need to check out conference2011.com now. That's conference2011.com. Back on the Generations Radio broadcast, friends. Today we're talking young entrepreneurs, a wonderful burgeoning field for a good many young men and young women out there. And again, folks, this fits directly into our vision for bringing back the oikonomia, the teamwork that ought to constitute a family economic venture. And with me to talk about this is a young entrepreneur that God has blessed over the years. His name is Nathan Sled, and he has a business called Sled Ventures or ZiplineGear.com. He's the founder and owner of the business. Nathan, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Nathan, cool business. Wow. Zip lines, adventure, flying through space over hundreds and hundreds of feet. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a really fun product to handle too.
Yeah, did you enjoy riding zip lines? Or is this something your family did before you got into the business?
I actually spent most of my time outside building tree houses, and that sort of my grandmother took me to this place where they had tree houses and zip lines. So I realized I could connect all these things with cables, and that's kind of what got me into it.
Yeah,
was doing it in my backyard.
So how did the whole business get started? How old were you when this whole thing came together?
I got started at 15.
Okay.
That was for my 15th birthday was when we went out to this adventure park sort of thing. And I came home and decided, wow, I've got 6 tree houses on my parents' property. Now I can connect them with cables. And I set to designing something. The stuff that was out there on the market was either too expensive or too short to do the kinds of distances I had in mind.
Yeah, and the whole 27-foot zip line's not all that much fun.
Yeah, so I came up with a design, and once I had finished it, I realized, wow, this thing works pretty well. It's not too expensive, and it's really tough. So I started selling them in the newspaper and on eBay, and it really just took off from there, making kits.
Mm-hmm. Now, capital-wise, how did you capitalize the venture at the beginning?
I had a really unique opportunity because I was living at home. Mm-hmm. I had virtually no overhead.
Okay.
I started the company with about $800 in the bank that I had put together mowing lawns and cleaning gutters and whatever. And so basically I started from that and cycled it up. You know, I would buy enough materials to make 2 or 3 zip lines. I'd sell them, I'd make a little more money, and I'd be able to put that all back into my next batch of materials.
This is a true bootstrapping venture for you from the beginning.
So, yeah, Yeah. And it was nice because I didn't need to take any money out of it. Mm. I was just able to cycle up. And
right.
I did that for about 2 years.
Mm-hmm. And you took your mom out for dinner from time to time just because she was helping out with... I just read on your website she had to take you down to the UPS store because you didn't have your license yet.
Yeah. When 15 rolled around, I thought, well, what do I need a car for? I don't go anywhere.
Mm.
But then by the time I needed it, I didn't have the hours then.
Right.
Yeah, I was, Mom, I got to make shipping today. It's 3 o'clock. Get me out the door.
I'll get you a milkshake on the way home. and no debt at all. So you didn't start with debt.
No.
Mm-hmm. That's good. That's a blessing. That's a blessing. Now, did you always consider yourself to be an entrepreneur, Nathan?
A little bit. I mean, I always enjoyed taking ideas. Like previously, I had, you know, I was the type to make a bunch of flyers and, you know, hit the entire neighborhood, yard work, and try to figure out how do I make the best flyer and how do I get customers to bring it back. So, and I was selling lemonade and cherries and strawberries on the roadside and, you know, anything I could get my hands on. So that was sort of inherent.
You think you're born that way or raised that way? Or is it a combination?
You know, I don't know. I think a lot of it is raised that way.
So your family created the environment in which you could flourish with ideas and concepts and you know, let's try making money here or there.
Yeah. I definitely think so, because I think the core, you know, fundamentals to being an entrepreneur is something that even later in life you can develop in somebody. So it's not necessarily something that has to be hereditary. You don't have to have it. You can catch on to it.
Yeah.
Catch a vision for what it is.
Okay, so you started this thing back in, 2005?
Mm-hmm.
And it's been some 5-6 years. Where are you today? Can you give us a little bit of a sense for where you are? You don't have to give us your whole spreadsheet or anything, but just give us a sense for what the business is doing.
Well, this last summer, I mean, every year has kind of taken us by storm. We happen to be a part of an industry that's really emerging.
Okay.
So zip lines haven't really been developed that much.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 5 years, it's really exploded. So I really see the Lord's blessing in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that being a part of an emerging market takes care of a lot of problems.
Sure.
Your customers are trying to find you.
It's hard to time these things perfectly because we don't predestine the future like God does.
Exactly. So it's a good thing it's his business.
Right.
He's taking care of it. So as far as, you know, where we're at, this past summer and Christmas season, I had 6 employees working for me full time. We had 3 phone lines going and we were just, taking calls and cranking out orders. So we're running out of, a fairly small office, about 3,000 square feet of, warehouse space.
Okay.
And we put out, I think, a little under 5,000 zip lines last year.
That's huge. That is huge. From 2 or 3, you know, every month or two back in 2005, you're pretty much an established business at this point.
Yeah. And it's really exciting to see that. And then, you know, as the business develops, it's a constant learning process for me, because once you reach this level, there's an entirely, you know, every time you increase your business, you have to rework the system. And, you know, it's like every 3 months I've got a different job description because I have to grow and change as the company grows and becomes a different animal.
Interesting. Now, granted, the timing was great. The business was there. You took advantage of an opportunity that God placed before you. But as you look back over the last 5-6 years, were there mistakes you could have made that would have ruined you?
Could have made. I mean, there's a lot of bad, a lot of bad things I could have done. I think one of the things I look at, for sure is the issue of debt.
Sure.
I think a lot of businesses need time to develop.
Right. You can't grow too fast.
Yeah. Right. And so to put it in a burden of debt where it has to be able to grow that quickly in order to pay it off, to meet that demand.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have made it getting a loan. Because,
right.
I needed all of my profit to go right back into inventory so I could build up my product and services.
But at this point, this business does support your family. Yeah, and you have a young family. You were married, and you have some little kiddies.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the vision for the business and the family? I mean, can you see your children participating in some of these endeavors in the years to come?
Definitely. I think going into, I mean, it's not really a home business anymore. It's kind of too big for that. But going into it, I definitely wanted to run my own company for family reasons. I mean, I enjoy business. I enjoy the creativity and the freedom that owning a company has. But really coming into it, it was a family decision where I looked at my parents and my family and looked at the kinds of values that we had and being able to spend time together, things like that. I want to be able to have my work schedule essentially be very family friendly. The other thing I looked at as I got into business was realizing that as I had to learn things, my dad was a school teacher, and he instilled a lot of values and principles, and that was phenomenal, and those are, you know, fundamental to me as an individual.
Yeah.
But as a school teacher and musician, he didn't have business experience.
Yeah.
So he could tell me, this is how a business, this is, he could teach me ethics, but as far as who do you talk to set up this account, I didn't have that.
Yeah.
And so, which, you know, wasn't a problem at all. And I was able to easily learn those. And, you know, he was helpful in that.
Right.
But I looked at how can I generationally start my sons out at yet another level above. My sons won't have to spend 3 hours on the internet trying to figure out how to set up a UPS account.
Yeah.
And so I can provide kind of a fundamental baseline, you know, building on my father's foundation to provide more for my kids. And I definitely see my business as being an environment where I would bring in my sons to see how it works, see how the business functions.
You have any secret to success here? Obviously, your faith does play a part in the marketplace. How do the principles of God's Word help us out there in the market?
I think that when you look at God's Word as an authority, not just in sort of what you might call your personal life, but also in the business world, you will make decisions that are unique and will stand out. You know, certain principles of, you know, what it means to really take care of a customer.
Right.
You know, the thought process of, I've made a sale, my customer has given me their money. You know, for us, we basically have one-time customers. So we could say, great, we got what we wanted from our customers, and now, you know, we're going to try and spend all our energy on working on our next customer. I think certain things about, taking care of them, being honest, willing to go the extra mile to make sure that your work is of the highest quality. Stand behind it when you make mistakes. You take ownership for that, and then just lots of practical things about running a business. I think can make, you know, using God's Word as a guide will make a difference.
Yeah, one of the things my wife commented to me upon a day or two ago is how poor the service is today, and how poor the character of the people serving you in restaurants or in retail outlets or what have you. how poor their character is compared to what it was in the 1970s and 1980s, and I think almost every generation has been saying that for a while now. But here is a great opportunity for Christians to step forward and be the most optimistic, the most encouraging, the most serving, the most diligent, the most honest. We really can shine in this market.
Yeah, and I think it's also interesting that, you know, apart from being, or I guess in addition to being an example and kind of shining that light, because of the poor customer service environment, when you come in with a phenomenal customer support, even if your products aren't super unique or aren't the best out there, if you come in and you're willing to stand behind it, you're willing to get to know your customer and find out exactly what they need as opposed to what you want to sell them, that stands out so much by contrast because, like in our industry, people aren't used to being taken care of by an e-commerce company.
Mm-hmm.
We work with a lot of e-commerce customers or companies.
It can be very anonymous, can't it?
It can, yeah. It can be hard to get someone to talk to. It can be hard to track things,
right. What
happened, where are we at. Online customer confidence is a big issue.
Yes.
Because people have damaged that confidence.
Yes.
In that marketplace. Mm-hmm. So there's an opportunity there for people to come in.
Big time.
You're working hard, and if you're treating your customers well, that alone will generate more business because you develop loyalty for that.
You know, Nathan, as I think about zip lines, which is the business you happen to be in, I think there are some people out there who would freak out about liability. People can get hurt on zip lines. But that didn't stop you. What's the deal here? How did you handle that?
That has, from the beginning, that has been, the dragon.
Yeah.
Is the issue of, for one, we want to make good product, and we want to be very careful about the designs we come out with and very thoughtful on them. And so what do you do knowing that, I'm fallible if something does go wrong? How do you respond to that? Or, more importantly, how do you prevent it and put the checks in point for that?
Yeah.
And then the other side of it, even if your equipment is rock solid and you've done everything right and you've done the testing, and it's good there. In a litigious society like this, is that enough to say this stuff is solid? This is how you should install it. This is how you operate it. Somebody goes on there and does something stupid. Are you still? What then if they still want to see? So it's definitely a tough thing, and it's something where on the one hand we pay a premium for insurance, and that's just a reality of the business.
Right.
And the other side of it, which is really comforting to me and, especially my wife, is that this isn't my business. This belongs to the Lord. And if somebody is going to take advantage of us and sue us and the thing goes bankrupt, I will say, wow, I learned a lot with that company. I'm going to need to find a new job.
Yeah.
But the Lord evidently didn't need that company any longer.
Right, right.
I it's not something I have to worry about.
So it sounds to me like the entrepreneurs will live by faith, and they'll take their risks by faith, just as the just must live by faith. It's a faith endeavor, pretty much, if you're going to be an entrepreneur.
Yeah. And I mean, other businesses aren't going to have the liability risks that we have to deal with, but they might have economic risks.
Sure.
And their markets will change, and things are volatile.
Right.
That's why we make our plans, but only the Lord can.
No one said we're going to live in a trouble-free world, and that may be one lesson people have to get over before they are willing to take on entrepreneurial endeavors like this. So now you have a commitment to raising up entrepreneurs. On your website, you said that you want to become a training ground for young entrepreneurs. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Yeah, basically, I was homeschooled in high school, and I was wanting to start a family, pretty much at 18, and I had my eye on a girl, and I had another eye on my finances, and there was this huge hurdle to going into the next stage of life, which was getting an income to provide for a family. And, you know, different people will look at, you know, what are the details of that. But for me, it was basically a home to live in and an income to provide for us.
Yeah.
And so that, it was massive. And the traditional route for tackling that was you spend 4 years spending money on an education, and then you come away from that, you know, if you're lucky, you won't be in debt. And then you have to build work experience after that. And so I was looking at easily, I was looking into an engineering path, and easily 6 years before I'd be able to pursue that.
Yeah, that's the route I took back in the 1980s. Yeah. But here with the entrepreneurial approach, you take a little different tact.
Yeah. And so what I found in pursuing, basically when I was a senior in high school, I said, I'm going to run my business on the one hand, and then I'm going to go to school on the other hand, and I'm going to keep going until one of them takes over the other.
Yeah.
And so my senior year in high school is actually going to a community college, and I was struggling to keep up with my homework because my business was picking up. And I had so many orders to deal with. So I said, okay, this is good. I'm going to go with business because I'm making money here and spending money. And so that decision, I mean, it does involve a commitment. You have to be able to, there is a lot of value to schooling and education. And so when you decide to do it on your own, you really have to commit yourself to continuing to learn. You can't ever stop your study. You can't ever stop learning and developing your own education personally. To take that route. So, anyway, back to your question there. In taking this route, I learned a ton about not only business, but purchasing a home, learning about debt, and you know the effects of it, the strategies of it, different things like that. Learning about what does it mean to have an income, what does it cost to support a family, all those sorts of things that a man has to learn in order to begin a family. I went through that process, and I was greatly, greatly helped by other men in my community who had their own businesses and their own families.
Yeah.
And so the time that I spent with other businessmen was invaluable to me. And so I looked at that, and once I had kind of come over that hurdle and gotten married and gotten an income and providing for my family, I said, wow, I've been given a gift that I need to pass on. And so that really played out in, I guess long story short, the way I look at it now is in my business. When I look for hiring somebody, I may not choose the most qualified person for the job that I have because I have an eye out for somebody who has, instead of the skill set, they might have the potential or the character for such a job.
Right.
And so I will try to walk alongside my employees. So instead of having, they have their job, I have mine, I'm trying to include them. When I go to a conference, I want to take an employee. When I deal with an insurance claim, I want to just be talking about it with everybody.
Yes.
They know what sorts of things that I deal with as the manager of the company. And I'm a bit of a talker, and so I will, we have kind of a weekly meeting where we go over, you know, our projects or, you know, how things are going. And, more often than not, I'll try to put in, you know, a topic to go over, whether it's a marketing strategy we're going to try out and the reasons for it. And, so, you know, in a nutshell, I'm trying to mentor my employees as I go.
Yeah, and that's That's just remarkable. I mean, that's remarkable. Not only have you captured a vision for entrepreneurship, but you also see the absolute necessity of mentorship if this vision is going to spread. And it's a wonderful thing, Nathan, that you're already trying to give back to a system that has already given to you, and that is the entrepreneurial world and the world of mentorship. So I commend you on what you're doing. This is just phenomenal. I've never spoken to a young man your age who has done so much in the field of mentorship, apprenticeship, and entrepreneurship. So I want to commend you today. And God bless your business. Let me recommend that folks check out your business sometime. Anybody wants to put in a zip line, check it out. ZiplineGear.com is the website. ZiplineGear.com. Nathan Sledd, thanks so much for joining us today and sharing a little bit of your history and your vision on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Tremendous stories today on the Generations Radio broadcast as we talk to young entrepreneurs. Friends, this ought to give you just a shot of encouragement, of hope, of a sense of what can happen with our own children and what can happen for the future. I don't think entrepreneurism is dead. Certainly mentorship is not dead. We've got some great opportunities for reestablishing a new economy. And by the way, that's exactly what Nathan Sledd says on his website. He says, our commitment to excellence is not just an investment in our customers. It's an investment in the next generation of entrepreneurs and businessmen who will be the groundwork of our future economy. And I believe those words, too. I think it's time right now to build this future economy. We do it by means of entrepreneurism, yes, but also the family economy. And that's why the Family Economics Conference is scheduled for another week or two away in North Carolina on March 11th and 12th. So just keep that in mind, friends. There are still just a few openings left if you'd like to register for that conference. Of course, we're keeping this vision for family economies front and center on this program because we believe that if we're going to restore the family and the economy, we've got to continue to bring back a biblical concept for the family economic venture. And that's why, of course, we're doing the Family Economics Conference. More information, just check out conference2011.com. It's conference2011.com. And this is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.